Tuesday, December 17th. First reading from Genesis chapter 49, verses 2 and 8 through 10. Jacob called his sons and said to them, "Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob, listen to Israel your father. You, Judah, shall your brothers praise, your hand on the neck of your enemies. The sons of your father shall bow down to you. Judah, like a lion's whelp, you have grown up on prey, my son. He crouches like a lion recumbent, the king of beasts, who would dare rouse him? The scepter shall never depart from Judah, or the mace from between his legs, while tribute is brought to him, and he receives the people's homage." Haydock Commentary. Jacob here alludes to Judah's name, his martial prowess, and dominion over all his brethren, who should be all called Jews and submit to his sway. Some explain all of this of Jesus Christ, others refer the first part of the prophecy just to Judah. The blessing of Judah foretells the strength of his tribe, the fertility of his inheritance, and principally that the scepter and legislative power should not be utterly taken away from his race till about the time of the coming of Christ, as in effect it never was, which is a demonstration against the modern Jews that the Messiah is long since come, for the scepter has long since been utterly taken away from Judah. This none can deny. Judah is compared to a lion, which was the emblem of his royal dignity, and was born in the standards of that tribe. Almost every word of this verse has been explained in a different manner, but all the ancient Jews agree with Christians that it contains a prediction of the Messiah and points out the period of his coming. Whether this was verified when Herod, a foreigner, got possession of the throne and was acknowledged by the Jews just about the time of our Savior's nativity, as most of the fathers suppose, or it only took its full effect when Agrippa lost all his power, the temple and the city were laid in ruins, and the whole nation dispersed forever, it is not perhaps so easy to determine. In either supposition, the Messiah has long since come. Jacob foretells either that Christ would make his appearance as soon as the Jews should fall under a foreign yoke, and in this sense he was born about the 37th year of Herod the Great, or he should come just before the kingdom of Judah should have an end, which took place in the 70th year of the Christian era, or about 37 years after the public appearance and death of our Savior. The designs of providence in watching over the Jews being accomplished, their republic shall be dissolved, because they have shed his blood, instead of acknowledging his celestial beauty. The evident signs of decay in the kingdom of the Jews were sufficient to excite the attention of all to look for the Messiah, and we read both in John 4:25, in Tacitus and Suetonius, that his appearance was fully expected about that time. The scepter is the emblem of sovereign, though not always independent, power. Judah and his posterity were always at the head of their brethren. They marched first in the wilderness, two of the judges were of his tribe. But their chief glory began with David, whose posterity the whole nation obeyed till Jeroboam tore away the 10 tribes. The rulers who came into power after the return of the Jews from exile were either of this tribe, at least by the mother's side, or were chosen and recognized by the tribe of Judah. Even Herod, in this sense, might be considered as a Jewish king. Perhaps indeed he was a usurper till the nation acknowledged his authority 2 years after the birth of Christ. If, therefore, no stranger was to be acknowledged by the nation till he came who was to establish a spiritual and everlasting kingdom, the moment was arrived when the Jews submitted to Herod, and Christ had actually been born already 2 years. The Gospel from Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 17. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham became the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah became the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez became the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Aminadab. Aminadab became the father of Nahshon, Nahshon became the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz became the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed became the father of Jesse, Jesse the father of David the king. David became the father of Solomon, whose mother had been the wife of Uriah. Solomon became the father of Rehoboam, Rehoboam the father of Abijah, Abijah the father of Asaph. Asaph became the father of Jehoshaphat, Jehoshaphat the father of Joram, Joram the father of Uzziah. Uzziah became the father of Jotham, Jotham the father of Ahaz, Ahaz the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah became the father of Manasseh, Manasseh the father of Amos, Amos the father of Josiah. Josiah became the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the Babylonian exile. After the Babylonian exile, Jeconiah became the father of Shealtiel, Shealtiel the father of Zerubbabel, Zerubbabel the father of Abiud. Abiud became the father of Eliakim, Eliakim the father of Azor, Azor the father of Zadok, Zadok became the father of Akim, Akim the father of Eliud, Eliud the father of Eleazar. Eleazar became the father of Mathan, Mathan the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who is called the Christ. Thus the total number of generations from Abraham to David is 14 generations, from David to the Babylonian exile, 14 generations, from the Babylonian exile to the Christ, 14 generations. Haydock Commentary. The genealogy begins with Abraham, the father of the faithful, because to him the promise was made that all generations should be blessed in his seed. In this genealogy, only four women are mentioned, of which two are Gentiles and two are adulteresses. Here the great sinners may find grounds for confidence in the mercies of Jesus Christ and hopes of pardon when they observed how the Lord of life and glory, to cure our pride, not only humbled himself by taking upon himself the likeness of sinful flesh, but by deriving his descent from sinners and inspiring the holy evangelist to record the same to all posterity. St. John Chrysostom says, "How, you say, does it appear that Christ descended from David? For if he be born not of man, but of a virgin, concerning whose genealogy nothing is said, how shall we know that he is of the family of David?" We have here two difficulties to explain. Why is the genealogy of the virgin passed over in silence, and why is Joseph's mentioned, as Christ did not descend from him? How shall we know that the virgin is descended from David? Hear the words of the Almighty addressed to the Archangel Gabriel. "Go to a virgin espoused to a man whose name is Joseph, of the house and family of David." What could you wish plainer than this when you hear that the virgin is of the family of David? Hence it also appears that Joseph was of the same house, for there was a law which commanded them not to marry anyone but of the same tribe. But whether these words, "of the house and family of David," be applied to the virgin or to Joseph, the argument is equally strong. For if he was of the family of David, he did not take a wife but out of the same tribe from which he had descended. Perhaps you will say he transgressed this law. But the evangelist has prevented such a suspicion by testifying beforehand that Joseph was a just man. Beware how you attach crime to him whose virtue is thus publicly acknowledged. The genealogy of Christ, as it appears by the 17th verse, is divided by the evangelist into thrice 14 generations, and so it is to contain 42 persons. The first class of 14 begins with Abraham and ends with David. The second class begins with Solomon and ends with Jeconiah. The third class is supposed to begin with Shealtiel and to end, says St. Jerome, with our Savior Christ. But thus we shall only find in the third class 13 generations, and in all only 41 instead of 42. But to solve this, the conjecture of St. Epiphanius seems to be most probable, that we are to understand two Jeconiases, the father and the son, who had the same name, so that the true reading should be, "Josiah begot Jeconiah and his brethren, and Jeconiah begot Jeconias, and Jeconias begot Shealtiel." There are several difficulties about reconciling this genealogy in St. Matthew with that in St. Luke. But without insisting on all the particulars in these short notes, I hope it may suffice to take notice that no one can reasonably doubt that both the evangelists copied out the genealogical tables as they were then extant and carefully preserved by the Jews, and especially by those families that were of the tribe of Judah and of the family of David, of which the Messiah was to be born. For if the evangelists had either falsified or made any mistakes as to these genealogies, the Jews undoubtedly would have objected this against their Gospels, which they never did. The difficulties here are, 1. Why does St. Matthew give the genealogy of Joseph and not of Mary? 2. How is it inferred that Jesus is descended from David and Solomon, because Joseph is the son of David? 3. How can Joseph have two men for his father, Jacob of the race of Solomon, and Heli of the race of Nathan? To the first it is generally answered that it was not customary with the Jews to draw out the genealogies of women. To the second, that Jesus being the son of Joseph, either by adoption or simply as the son of Mary his wife, he entered by that circumstance into all the rights of the family of Joseph. Moreover, Mary was of the same tribe and family of Joseph, and thus the heir of the branch of Solomon marrying with the heiress of the branch of Nathan, the rights of the two families united in Joseph and Mary were transmitted through them to Jesus, their son and heir. To the third difficulty, it is answered that Jacob was the father of Joseph according to nature, and Heli his father according to law, or that Joseph was the son of the latter by adoption and of the former by nature. Some think that Joseph and the Blessed Virgin were truly married at the time of Christ's conception, others that they were only then espoused or engaged by a promise to marry afterwards. St. Jerome says, "When you hear the name of husband, do not from thence imagine them to be married, but remember the custom of the Scriptures, according to which they who are espoused only are called husbands and wives." That Jesus, who was called Christ, was of the seed of David is also evident, as St. Augustine affirms from various texts of the Holy Scriptures, as in the Epistle to the Romans, where St. Paul, speaking of the Son of God, says, "Who was made to him of the seed of David according to the flesh." See also the promises made to David in 2 Kings 7 and Psalms 88 and 131, and spoken of Solomon as a figure of Jesus Christ.